the internalizing of the challenge is the condition for all growth. So you can't help people, like, you don't build muscles by having your muscles moved for you. The moving of the muscle against resistance has to come from within the muscle. So freedom is really the basis of all growth. You can't have any growth. You can't have any kind of growth, self-mastery, and you can't flourish without freedom.
Before we get started, if you enjoy these episodes, you might want to explore more at optimorc.com. Our website offers unique content, tools, and exercises to help you thrive at work and beyond. We have an in-depth masterclass which covers our entire theory of growth. We have daily recommendations for personalized advice, and we have a platform to help groups and organizations learn and practice optimal work together. You can get a free trial at optimorc.com. Now let's get started with today's episode. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of Golden Hour. We're back after a few weeks off, back here with Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be back with you.
Hey, Sharif, great to be back.
Yeah, Kevin, well, it's been some time off, and I think we have had a lot of ideas bouncing around, so I'm excited to get back and start talking about these things.
That's right.
Well, one interesting book that came up was Alfie Kohn's Punished by Rewards. And I guess it was pretty big in the 90s in education. Maybe it's still very influential now. But very interesting book on rewards and motivations, especially in an educational context. But I think it has a lot of implications for how we think about work and motivation in a professional context, too. So maybe we could discuss that today.
Yeah, that sounds great. And Sharif, I understand that you actually have you've had in your upbringing some exposure to this book, Punished by Rewards.
Yeah, is that right? In some ways, I'm kind of a product of this book. When we were looking over it, I was telling my mom that, I'm actually reading, well, I was at that time reading a podcast on the book. And I said, well, I'm listening to this podcast on Punished by Rewards. And she said, no kidding, Alfie Kohn? And she's, I practically raised you on that book, so it's very, very influential.
This will give all of our listeners and a little bit more of a window into your
exactly.
Upbringing.
That's right. So the point of the book is that you should never say good things about people, especially kids.
Exactly,
that's my experience.
No, that's right. Yeah, no positivity whatsoever.
Right.
No, the book is a very, it is a continual assault on Skinner. So I guess probably some of our listeners are familiar with Skinner and this idea of, it's called operant conditioning. It's about positive and negative reinforcement, positive and negative punishment. And I think that behavioral therapy was very tightly, in a sense, controlled by Skinnerian thinking for a long time until the third wave behavioral therapies came about. So acceptance and commitment therapy and others. So it was fascinating though to get exposed to this book that was written in 1993. So it was right in time for your mom to raise you by it. and it is a critique of how powerful pop behaviorism has become in American society and particularly in our educational system. So his big thing is that rewarding kids with grades isn't helpful. So giving, it doesn't matter like what percent are getting A's, what percent are getting F's. He thinks that fundamentally any reward is demotivating. So it's a very bold claim. And that is the claim though, that any kind of reward and any kind of praise, in fact, undermines the well-being of others.
Yeah. And I actually went to a school for a number of years, 6th through 10th grade, where there were no grades. It was just all evaluations. I guess part of the idea is that, and you definitely see this, is that students get so obsessed with the idea of just getting an A. I need to get good grades. I need to get a good SAT score, whatever it is, that they lose sight of the fact of the deeper meaning of learning and knowledge and wisdom, and they kind of lose yeah, they lose sight of that and lose interest in learning for its own sake.
Yeah, and that's, I think, always been seen as one potential pitfall of the educational system. It might be putting a little too fine a point on it, though, to say that grades are always destructive. So that I think that, like so many things, you know, I think it actually depends on the whole context. So, and if the context is that somehow grades are going to be used competitively to assign worth to people, then yeah, that could be that could be destructive. But if it's simply helping people to set challenges for themselves, to see how they can improve their grasp of material, to know what it looks like to do, to have mastered something, then it could be more positive. But the basic idea is that like any kind of reward for a behavior ends up cheapening the motivation for the behavior. So that the ultimate reason to do anything is because of, I guess you could say, like the beauty of doing it well. So this intrinsic motivation. And so the beauty of learning how to do this form of math or how to solve this kind of problem to gain mastery. So, and that kind of mastery is very enjoyable and attractive. And so if you can rely on intrinsic motivation, then you have a self-renewing supply of motivation that the person will have. Nothing compares with intrinsic motivation, you know, to move people to surpass themselves. And so I think that idea is fundamentally a good one.
Before we continue, a brief message. If you're benefiting from these discussions, please hit like and subscribe to our channel. Doing so helps us reach more people. So you're not just learning yourself, you're helping others discover a path to growth and flourishing too. Thanks so much for your support. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Yeah, could you elaborate on Skinner's approach and the way it's been influential in behavioral therapy and, I don't know, maybe even other aspects of society, the way it's kind of crept in, just to give us some a better sense of what Cohn is arguing against?
Yeah, so positive and negative punishment for Skinner. Positive punishment is actually applying something painful, and negative punishment is removing something enjoyable. So if you tell the child, well, if you don't, you know, clean your room, then you're not going to be able to, you know, use the iPad tonight or no dessert. So the withdrawal of something enjoyable is a negative punishment, and then positive punishment, you're like, you know, actually causing pain. So to spank them or to berate them or yell at them. So, and Skinner was very against punishment. Instead, he talked about positive and negative reinforcement, which he thought produced more reliable results, because he thought punishment is unpredictable. Sometimes kids rebel, sometimes they, but he thought, boy, reinforcement, this is what always works. So positive reinforcement is that when they do the right thing, you know, so whatever, you know, they stay quiet all the way through class, then you give them some kind of reward. So that you give them a positive reinforcer, usually immediately after they do the thing. And negative reinforcement is the cessation of something noxious. So that's not used as much, but he didn't think that was actually as applicable and healthy. But we do use it, for instance, in getting people to put on a seatbelt. So the beeping in the car won't stop until you put the seatbelt on. So that's negative reinforcement, the cessation of something noxious. So when you do the desired behavior. So, I mean, could you imagine if cars would, when you put on the seatbelt, would say, good job? Like that wouldn't actually work so much, but the negative reinforcer, like no one is going to drive, you know, for a half hour with that beeping. So it's kind of how we learned to make people put on seatbelts. Okay. So the problem with positive and negative reinforcement, so it sounds like, yeah, positive is better, you know, so if someone does something for you and you thank them for it. So thanking others, showing them attention, you know, smiling at them when they do what you want. All of that seems good, right? But the problem is, it's all manipulative. It's all about getting people to do a desired behavior. So that's Cohn's essential critique, that you end up coercing people to do what you want them to do, bypassing their freedom. So rather than appealing to their freedom, helping them to see what is the good here, to see why it's good, to see why this is desirable. So instead of having teaching moments, you have rewarding and punishing. So he thinks that rewarding and punishing stand in for teaching. So then it's all about managing the behavior of people rather than helping them to develop internally by using their freedom well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this idea of rewards, it actually comes up a lot in some of the kind of self-improvement books that we've read and comment on. And oftentimes they recommend, okay, if you want to build a habit, whenever you perform that new action, say it's working out or getting up early, then you should reward yourself to reinforce that behavior. So if you go work out, then reward yourself by watching an episode of your favorite TV show. And that will, your brain will link those two things together and it'll have a more positive evaluation of working out, which you think is difficult right now. So that's not really, there's no like compulsion there because you're just doing it to yourself. So what are your thoughts on that then?
So it has to do partly with the nature of the reward, that in fact, doing things well, doing things for the highest motive, enjoying the good in the thing you're doing, those are what lead to intrinsic motivation. So it's really meaning, mastery, and enjoyment. This kind of deeper joy, the joy of, like, when you talk about taking pride in your work, that's what we're talking about, is so the ability to do something so well, you can take pride in it. And that's like the healthy sense of pride, you know, I think, which is there's an enjoyment you have in the good. So if it's not increasing those meaning, mastery, and enjoyment of the right of the action itself as good, then it's something extrinsic to it. So it's not really then perfecting you in the highest way possible. Okay, this is, in a sense, the Cohen claim. I think that it can be the case that if you're always doing A for the sake of B, in the end, B occupies your intention more. The reason why you're doing it becomes more and more about getting B. And so it's less and less about valuing A. So anything you do for the sake of something else runs the risk of then you end up in your intention aiming for that something else. So it's like, say it's a, what if you're going to do some very noble act of service? So, you know, let's say that, you know that there's some neighbor who has been shut in and is very lonely, and you're going to go and make a visit to this person and just spend some time talking to them, you know, just to kind of like lift their spirits and to be a joyful presence to them. Well, that'd be a very beautiful thing to do, right? So now if you did it because you're going to reward yourself with watching another episode of your favorite show, wouldn't that kind of cheapen doing it? So I think that when the things we're doing are inherently meaningful and capable of helping us to grow into kind of mastery, then the enjoyment of them, we want to kind of protect. We have to protect, in a sense, our palate, our sense of taste, so that we have a palate for more like spiritual joys, so to enjoy higher things. So I think that then it would be great if we just loved serving others. Yeah, and we love taking the time to be understanding with someone to really, you know, and to help them in some, it'd be encouraging to them in some way. Well, all of that's really beautiful. So rewarding yourself can kind of cheapen that. But if what you're doing, I think, is really just, say, drudgery, so like you're having to, I don't know, say, clean out the garage, you know, well, giving yourself a little reward, like I'll, you know, have my favorite beverage right after, I don't see that as being damaging to you as a person. Like, well, so to me, I don't think we want to be so absolutist about it, you know, and say that you could never give yourself any little rewards. But at the same time, I think we'd want to be careful about thinking that every good thing we do has to be rewarded with something lesser, in fact, than the action that we did.
Yeah. And is there a sense of people growing in terms of the types of rewards that they appreciate? I mean, yeah, it'd be great if everyone just, you know, from their earliest years appreciated these noble spiritual goods, but maybe a 5-year-old isn't quite there yet, and they need to first be kind of rewarded with other things, and then they gradually improve.
So, okay, now just to take the Cone line on this, you know, he calls it bait and switch, and he thinks it's fundamentally dishonest. So that to think that we're going to use extrinsic motivators at first, but then we're going to switch them later, you know, with more intrinsic rewards. Okay, so the question, it seems to me that children, take the case of children, because I think a lot of what he's talking about is dealing with kids. It's true that if you are wanting them to really grow into generous, caring adults, they have to develop at some point a taste for generosity, a taste for being caring. So if they never develop that taste, then you're not helping them to do it. And that children learn not so much by being told or understanding the good qualities, but by tasting good qualities. So, and I think that's a fundamental kind of thing that like children have to learn what it feels like to be selfless and to see that there is the joy that comes in giving. Cone's critique is that rewards treat children as takers, not givers. And so they don't really give them a taste for doing things generously. So that the kid never then learns to do things for the joy of the noble action, but they do it to get something else. They're always on the take. And so I think that's a wonderful concern to have. And so I appreciate that he sometimes might have to maintain an absolutist kind of line here, you know, that maybe needs to be tempered from time to time. You know, and so that, and he does admit that, okay, if you're talking about, you know, sticking the fork into the electrical socket, you know, there's some role for, you know, for clear rules, you know, and for like, you know, in this house, you know, we don't, you know, put the pet in the microwave. Okay, there has to be some, you know, things like they just have to learn you don't do. So, but he just is reacting. He doesn't want that to be the dominant tone. He thinks that, in fact, the best tone in a house is one of a loving, unconditional bond.
Yeah, I see that. And then kind of related, so thinking about praise versus, say, encouragement. Obviously, praise is maybe going to be after the act that they've done something. So there's a kind of reward, praise being a kind of reward, that someone else has done something good. So you give them a reward or you praise them, whereas before they actually perform, you're giving them some encouragement. You know, you can do it, or maybe some deeper thing like an actual reframe. How would you evaluate the difference between praise and encouragement? Is it because encouragement still seems like it's bringing something extrinsic to bear on the person's action?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm not sure that I would have the perfect Conean answer, you know, but I think the idea is that when you're praising, you're like above the action, judging it. So you've set up a dynamic where you're not, in a sense, with the child, but you're this outside judge. And so if you could imagine like a boss in a meeting, if, you know, everything, as soon as someone was talking, the boss would choose what to praise and what the person just said, it'd be putting the boss in a position of being a judge. So, and it would make everyone feel lesser than the boss to be, what is he or she going to praise now? Who knows? You know, it's like, and so I think that's the dynamic he's really sensitive to, that when you're praising others, you're still judging others. And so the person feels like, oh, I passed the test this time, but I'm always having to pass a test. So what he thinks is a much healthier approach is a sense of being together in a challenge. And that you're giving them kind of the room to be creative and to make mistakes and to learn from them. So that you're like, the bond is never what's being bartered. It's not, you know, it's like, this is the problem he thinks is conditional love from a person that you really owes you unconditional love. Like parents really owe their children, in a sense, this unconditional love. It's like, that's what children most need in order to grow. And we have to be careful that praise could look like returning this thing, which should be unconditional love and attention and regard. And we're making it somehow conditional now in what they do. So that you get more of my positive attention when you do something good. So that my positive attention is really contingent on your behavior. But rather than like, you have my unconditional love, you have my full regard, you have my positive attention, and like, let's treat this as an adventure. Like, how could this challenge you're facing bring out your best? Doesn't, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. Let's just see, what would it look like? That, I think that's the sense that he wants to create, the space where the children and the parents can together kind of problem solve. So he sees it more as being this collaborative thing, that whatever the challenge is, it could even be the child's emotion. Like, how do you relate to, you know, the child's very anxious about something? Well, I think he'd be on board with the idea that you really just want to like help them to see that you're totally understanding of how hard it is, and you're totally confident that they'll find a way to do this, you know, and to help them to have this freedom to have more creative responses to it. But he says, like, we're talking about these things, you're like, you have to be careful because you can't be too prescriptive in any sense. So he said, everyone wants an easy approach, like, oh yeah, this is like the rules for parenting. You know, instead, it's more about always prioritizing the bond with the child. That's the setting then. And you're not going to, as long as the bond is, the unconditional love is there. He has a book actually called Unconditional Parenting on that very topic. Then everything else, I think, flows naturally from that. They'll tend to be on board with what you value, and they'll want to value that too.
So, Kevin, I think that leads into another topic, which I wanted to discuss. We recently redid the on OptimWork.com, the coaching class. Now it's called Transforming Conversations. And that's covering, you know, the conversations that you would have in a different types of relationships, maybe family or friendship or coaching or mentoring, or maybe even to some extent therapy. So I'm wondering, I think it's easy when you're mentoring someone to also have this kind of judgmental or coercive approach is, okay, I just want to get this person to do this behavior. So I'm wondering, have you found Alfie Kohn's work, having recently reviewed it, to like connect on that level with our view of coaching or having transformative conversations, where you see they fit together there?
Yeah, I think that he has... I think in optimal work, we have maybe more of a vocabulary capable of kind of expressing these things, but his instincts are all aligned totally. And so, and one example of this is that he, I think, would be completely on board with the idea that the first thing you need to do when you're helping someone is to be understanding. And that one of his real critiques of, you know, rewards and punishments for kids is that it doesn't seek to understand the problematic behavior, to try to get into the position of the child. Like, what is the challenge that they're facing? You know, and how can we help them to discover a better way of engaging this challenge? So if we want children to grow, that he is a big believer in this idea of self-determination, it has to come from within them. But the ones helping them have to aid them making these discoveries, but you can't do it for them. You can't give it to them. So, but you know, to help them discover the way this challenge can somehow bring out their best. So, and I think that's exactly how we talk about it in our transforming conversations, that no matter who you're talking to, it could be a child, but it could be a peer, know, it could be anyone of any, it doesn't mean that there's some power differential. It just means that if you're going to be helpful to them, you first have to deeply understand where they're coming from and the challenge they're facing to kind of identify what's the real challenge here. Okay, that's the first. And then you have to help them to think of how can this actually bring out their best? Like, how can this challenge be the setting for them to make new discoveries? So, and to help them to see, wow, okay, this is actually giving me to do something exciting and adventurous. So, and that it's okay to make mistakes as long as I have a sense of what I'm aiming for. So I think that idea of encouragement, you know, encouraging others doesn't mean giving them a reframe. Like, just like to, it's instead encouraging to help them make fresh discoveries. So, and that means coming up with a view of the challenge that means that now they can internalize it. That on their own, they can be embracing it. So the internalizing of the challenge is the condition for all growth. So you can't help people, like, you don't build muscles by having your muscles moved for you. The moving of the muscle against resistance has to come from within the muscle. So freedom is really the basis of all growth. You can't have any growth. You can't have any kind of growth, self-mastery, and you can't flourish without freedom. So I think Cohn does a fantastic job of highlighting the necessity, you know, of the freedom of the person so that you're helping them to aim for the best.
Wonderful. Kevin, I think that's a great note for us to end on here.
Great. All right, Shrewel, thanks for your questions.
Yeah, it's been good to be back here and make another episode here with you.
Great to be back. Thanks.
All right. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and you're looking for more in-depth guidance, check out optimalwork.com, our platform of content, tools, and exercises that will help you thrive at work and beyond. See you next week.